It's the Noon Report from Family Life, bringing a Christian worldview to what's happening in New York, Pennsylvania, across the country, and around the world. Weather with Kevin Williams, sports with Sunny Delfiette, plus special features and reports with the Family Life News team. Now, here's what's happening.
Good afternoon and happy Friday, everyone. I'm Bill Price. Joe Biden breaks his silence.
We have great confidence in our son.
That is our top story this Friday. The presumptive president has finally addressed the controversy surrounding his son's business dealings overseas. Hunter Biden under federal investigation for those dealings, and his father telling The Late Show's Stephen Colbert last night he stands by his son.
I am not concerned about any accusations been made against him. It's used to get to me. I think it's kind of foul play, but look, it is what it is. And he's a grown man. He is the smartest man I know. I mean, in pure intellectual capacity. And as long as he's good, we're good.
South Carolina Senator Lindsey Graham says he's not good. The Republican says the Hunter Biden investigation is not going away just because his father is taking over the Oval Office.
This is a cloud over his presidency. There's no way to go forward without having somebody look at this and giving us rational explanations. So if you think the Biden administration believes this will suddenly go away, you're wrong. This is like political flypaper. It's going to stick and stick and stick.
New text messages show a former business associate of Hunter Biden telling him to, quote, get Joe involved.
Joe Biden absolutely needs to explain it. And his excuse that this is somehow foul play or that it's just being used to get to him. Well, yeah, it's being used to get to him because he was involved.
Jim Hansen with the Security Studies Group says there needs to be a special counsel to look into Hunter Biden's business dealings and whether or not they were tied to the White House when Joe Biden was vice president.
There are other emails out that show Hunter's partner, Devin Archer, and Hunter himself bragging about getting meetings for clients with U.S. government officials, including Joe. If Joe knew about their business, then Joe is in trouble.
Hansen says Joe Biden may be guilty of using his position of power to financially benefit his son Hunter. Utah Republican Mike Lee sits on the Senate Judiciary Committee.
This is sad. Everybody has a family member somewhere who makes mistakes, and certainly Hunter Biden is one of those people. To the extent that his father was involved, we're talking about an entirely new type of problem.
Senator Lee says it's amazing that the mainstream media tried so hard to dig up dirt that never existed on President Trump, but won't lift a finger to report on the Hunter Biden controversy when the evidence grows by the day. Charlie Hurt writes for the Washington Times.
There's an enormous amount of evidence. I mean, you have actual emails from the parties that were soliciting millions of dollars and apparently getting millions of dollars from foreign powers. This isn't a smoking gun. This is like video of the gun going off.
Hurt says the only question now is the degree to which Joe Biden himself has been compromised. Well, speaking of controversy, California Congressman Eric Swalwell continues to sit on the House Intelligence Committee despite his ties to a Chinese spy. Speaker Nancy Pelosi continues to reject calls for Swalwell to step down.
There are 230 Democrats, and you mean to tell me she cannot find a single one that didn't date a Chinese spy? There's no one else that she could pick other than Swalwell?
Former Congressman and federal prosecutor Trey Gowdy.
He berated Jared Kushner and Donald Trump Jr. for meeting with a Russian lawyer, not dating one, meeting with one. And he calls the president an agent of Russia. Meanwhile, for 4 years, the guy's not smart enough to know he's being played by a Chinese spy. And that's the best Nancy Pelosi can do.
The New York Times still has yet to even mention the Eric Swalwell controversy. The Moderna vaccine could get the green light as soon as today from the FDA. It would be the second vaccine to hit the market to help combat the virus.
So excited that it's here, even with a little fear, but a heart of gratitude because it's so needed.
6 million doses of the Moderna vaccine could be shipped out this weekend, and unlike Pfizer's vaccine, this one doesn't need to be stored at Arctic cold temperatures. Correspondent Peter King.
The Moderna version has one big advantage over Pfizer. It could be stored with standard refrigeration. That'll make it easier to send it to remote areas without worrying about its spoiling.
Vice President Mike Pence got the Pfizer vaccine earlier today. Congressional leaders and members of the U.S. Supreme Court also going to get the jab soon. This as the pandemic continues to take its toll. This man watched as his parents died from the virus, holding hands.
They said, till death do us part, and that's how that went.
Over 310,000 Americans have died since the pandemic began. Today, the U.S. Supreme Court threw out a lawsuit seeking to block President Trump's plan to exclude illegal immigrants from the census count. The 6-3 decision gives the president a short-term victory as he pursues hardline policies toward immigration in the final weeks of his presidency. A midnight deadline approaching for a COVID relief bill. Correspondent Natalie Brand is on Capitol Hill.
Roughly $900 billion package could also include a $600 to $700 check for most Americans, as well as money for rental assistance, food assistance, money for schools and vaccine distribution.
Natalie Brand reporting. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says lawmakers are close to getting a deal done, but close isn't good enough for New York City restaurant owner Amanda Cowan.
It feels a lot like we have been abandoned. There comes a point when you run a business where you just can't keep throwing money down the toilet.
Over 1,000 restaurants have closed for good in New York City because of the COVID lockdowns. 21 people facing charges after authorities broke up an alleged drug trafficking ring at the University of North Carolina. U.S. Attorney Matthew Martin says the ring involved three fraternity chapters.
There were sales going on inside these houses. Dealers set up inside these houses, poisoning fellow members of their fraternity, fueling a culture.
Some of the drugs ended up on other school campuses. Still to come this Friday, the minimum wage going up in New York, an eyewitness account to the pileup in Pennsylvania, and rescued after 10 hours in Owego.
Well, good afternoon to all. The weekend is upon us, and looks like a little moderation of temperatures will occur. With that, though, a little bit of pesky precip in the forecast as well. I'll be back with forecast details. We'll see you in 10 minutes.
Okay, Kevin Williams, checking the stories making news where you live in New York and Pennsylvania, Friday, December 18th. What a week it has been, folks. They're going to be talking about this storm for years to come. The record-setting snows burying Binghamton, where John Taylor trudged through the waist-high white stuff to check on a loved one.
My sister-in-law lives up around the corner here, and I just want to make sure her heat vent is open so no CO2 goes back in the house. Got to keep the heat on.
Taylor spent most of Thursday helping his neighbors dig out from nearly 4 feet of snow. He says in this season of giving, it's the least he could do.
I think we always have a good heart for everybody. I was just talking to the neighbors down on my side of the road, whoever, and everybody's out trying to help each other and just do good things for each other. It's great.
In nearby Owego, that village digging out from 41 inches of snow.
We're all kind of pulling together.
I've been shoveling snow for many hours now.
It's so tall, like I've been scooping like a foot off.
Well, we don't get snow like this at all in Scotland.
Rosie Cole Hamilton just moved to Owego from the UK. She says she's ready to move back.
So if we have maybe an inch of snow, the whole country shuts down.
In Broome County, New York, the travel ban there has been lifted, but police still urging no unnecessary travel. Now to COVID. Erie County, New York, reaching a grim milestone, 1,000 deaths from the disease.
More than 1,000 people have died in Erie County in 9 months as a result of a virus. I would have thought we could have done better.
County Executive Mark Polenkars.
You can point the finger at many different things. You can point the finger at Erie County government. Did we do a better job? Maybe, maybe not. Could we have, I should say. But it's just sad because those are lives. Those are people. They're just not just statistics.
Poland Cars asking Western New Yorkers to stay home for the holidays next week to help stop the spread of the bug. He says you may have to forego family traditions this Christmas in order to enjoy the next Christmas. In Pennsylvania, Health Secretary Dr. Rachel Levine also urging folks to avoid large family gatherings this Christmas.
Before Thanksgiving, health officials discouraged people from gathering and traveling, but many did not heed those warnings. Levine said Pennsylvania is still feeling the impact of the predicted post-Thanksgiving surge. She said she worries about the potential for an even worse surge after Christmas and New Year's, saying it's critically important that people stay home, celebrate the holidays within their households, and only go out when necessary. Terry Diener, Family Life News.
Thank you, Terry. Local funeral homes are struggling to keep up with the number of deaths from COVID-19.
Every day is challenging, and it's not getting any less challenging. I'm seeing all age ranges of people of various levels of health dying from COVID. It's not just taking people who are elderly and sick. It's taking everyone.
Marika McMeans is a funeral home director in Rochester, New York. She says the pandemic has also put them in the position of being a shoulder to cry on for a lot of families.
I'm oftentimes that shoulder that they lean on. You know, I help walk the widow to the grave of her husband kind of thing.
McMean says they're working 80 hours a week to keep up with the increased rate of death from this pandemic. New York Governor Andrew Cuomo raising the minimum wage. Again, the rate going to shoot up by varying amounts across the state at the start of the new year.
Seems to be the wrong time to be imposing increased costs on sectors that are, you know, struggling just to hang on, let alone recover.
Ken Pakulski with the State Business Council says now is not the time to be jacking up the minimum wage on small businesses in New York. Republican State Senator George Borrello from Jamestown owns three businesses that border Pennsylvania.
We're literally on the border with Pennsylvania, where the minimum wage is only $7.25 an hour. This is going to be more pressure on businesses, and they will continue to close here in New York State.
Democratic Assemblywoman Pat Fahey admits the timing is not good for a minimum wage hike, but it's not just small businesses who are struggling. Families and individuals also crumbling beneath the financial weight that is COVID.
So many have gone from full-time to part-time work because businesses are hurting. So we know businesses are hurting. So it's not the best timed increase in minimum wage.
Fahey says this will be the last rate hike for quite a while. Baseline pay for workers in New York will jump by $1 an hour in Westchester and Long Island. It's going to be $14 an hour there. In New York City, the rate staying put at $15 an hour. For the rest of the state, the minimum wage will increase to $12.50 an hour. That's up from $11.80 an hour. Pennsylvania's unemployment rate dropped by nearly a full percentage point last month to 6.6%. It is the first time since May of 2015 that the jobless rate in the Keystone State is below the national average. A New York State trooper saved an Owego, New York man's life after that motorist was trapped in his car under 4 feet of snow for more than 10 hours. Family Life's Brandon Dixon has the incredible story.
Sergeant Jason Cully was responding to a 911 call of a driver who was in need of assistance on a section of State Route 17C in Owego. But Cully couldn't find the driver. While searching the area, the sergeant saw what looked like a row of mailboxes and began digging in the snow to check for an address. While he was shoveling through the snow, Sergeant Cully hit the windshield of the car where the man was trapped inside. The vehicle had been plowed in, and the man was left stranded under nearly 4 feet of snow for over 10 hours with no heat. The man was taken to the hospital where he's being treated for frostbite and hypothermia. Brandon Dixon, Family Life News.
Incredible. Thank you, Brandon. Well, speaking of remarkable stories of survival this week, a man involved in that 66-vehicle pileup on Interstate 80 in Pennsylvania during this week's epic snowstorm, now sharing his harrowing ordeal. Justin Majeski was 10 minutes from home when the nightmare began.
The trucks that were behind me, with the way the snow was falling, was almost white out. They couldn't see to stop in time, and they were unable to stop, kind of hitting the back of my car and pushing me probably about 50 to 100 yards into the back of a truck that was in front of me that was stopped.
Majewski describes the domino effect of that chain reaction crash.
As I was sitting in my car on the phone with 911, I could still feel the cars from behind impacting and feel the vibrations going through the whole pileup.
Majewski says his car was a mangled mess of steel, and after 5 hours, he was eventually taken to the hospital. He says he's still a little sore today, but grateful to be alive. Sunny time, your two-minute drill.
Thank you, Bill. Let's start with the finale for Thursday Night Football this season, a thriller in overtime.
App sneak, dives, waiting for the signal, touchdown, Chargers!
Justin Herbert snuck in for the win on the goal line as the Chargers outlasted the Raiders 30-27. The game went to overtime after Chargers kicker Michael Badley missed two go-ahead field goals in the final 2 minutes and 38 seconds. Herbert finished with 314 yards and two touchdowns for L.A. Charger head coach Anthony Lynn.
All right, second win, 11 days. I was proud of the way those guys played. A lot of guys played banged up on a short week. A lot of young players stepped up and made some plays to help us win the football game.
For the Raiders, Marcus Mariota, in for an injured Derek Carr, threw for 226 yards, a touchdown, and an interception. Raider head coach John Gruden.
Really painful right now to lose. And we've had a lot of tight games go down to the buzzer. And this one was tough. But I am proud of our players, proud of our coaches, and congratulate the Chargers.
Chargers move to 5-9. The Las Vegas Raiders fall to 7-7. By the way, in the first half, head coach John Gruden wore an Oakland Raiders hat. Oops. Pair of Saturday games on the NFL docket this week. First, the AFC East leading Buffalo Bills battle the Broncos in Denver. Buffalo 10-3 and can clinch a playoff spot with the win. Head coach Sean McDermott.
Just focused on a good opponent in the Denver Broncos. They got good players, good coaches, Pat Shermer, Mike Munchak, Vic Fangio do a great job. And they had a big win against Carolina last week. So that's really where my and our team's focus needs to be.
It will be Buffalo's first division title since 1995 with the victory. The Broncos are 5-8 on the year. The Florida Gators are canceling 3 more men's basketball games as star forward Keontae Johnson recovers in the hospital. The school says he's shown encouraging signs of progress amidst the test. Johnson collapsed during Saturday's game against Florida State. For Family Life, I'm Sonny Dolphiette.
Thank you, Sonny. Still to come on this Friday edition of the Noon Report, the boys are back. Capital Connection on the way, plus the Snow Angel from Harrisburg.
Christianity has inspired much of the West's greatest art, sometimes from unlikely artists, sometimes in the middle of war. For the Colson Center, I'm John Stone Street. This is Breakpoint. In the recent Tom Hanks movie Greyhound, the captain of a destroyer leads a convoy across the U-boat infested North Atlantic during World War II. Now, to say that the trip from the U.S. to Britain in 1942 was dangerous is not only an understatement of epic proportion, it offers the context for the extraordinary composition of Benjamin Britten's Ceremony of Carols. Britten was arguably the most important British composer of the 20th century. After 3 years in North America, he found himself in the middle of the Atlantic aboard a Swedish cargo vessel trying to return to his native England. Instead of panicking amidst the harrowing circumstances of a World War II dangerous crossing, he wrote two choral works, the Hymn to Saint Cecilia and the Ceremony of Carols. And as the name suggests, the Ceremony of Carols consists of 10 carols framed by the chant, Hodie Christus Natus Est, today Christ is born, at both the beginning and the end. The carols he employed date from the 14th to 16th centuries and are sung in middle and early modern English as well as in Latin. One carol, Deo Gratias, Thanks Be to God, sung in a combination of Middle English and Latin, tells the story of Genesis 3. While the text is primarily about the fall, the carol's musical energy and emphasis is on thankfulness, specifically thankfulness to God for providing a Savior who sets things right. The most beloved carol in the work is This Little Babe. And despite the sentimental sounding title of this carol, the text describes the all-out battle that this babe of Bethlehem wages against Satan himself. The text was written by Robert Southwell, a Catholic priest who was hanged, drawn, and quartered by Queen Elizabeth I. Here's how it goes. This little babe, so few days old, is come to rifle Satan's fold. All hell doth at his presence quake, though he himself for cold do shake. For in his weak, unarmed wise, the gates of hell he will surprise.
Jeff Spurgeon of New York's classical music station WQXR calls this little babe his favorite Christmas carol. In Southwell's words and in Britain's music, says Spurgeon, the battle between good and evil is won by, quote, a baby born in obscure poverty, and it's depicted, quote, not by a huge orchestra and massive voices, but by a harp and a choir of children. Well, Britten, the man who pulled all of this off musically, could hardly be described as an Orthodox Christian, definitely not a devout one. His personal life, including his sexual proclivities, were the source of numerous controversies during his life, even after his death. Still, he was. At least if this work composed during a potentially deadly voyage is any proof, he's a Christ-haunted man. Believe it or not, in this, Britten's not unusual. See, so much of the West's greatest art is inspired by Christian themes. In fact, it's impossible to imagine the West's cultural heritage without Christianity. And though much of our greatest art was created by people of unquestionable faith, such as Johann Sebastian Bach, others were produced by people whose faith is unknown or known to be non-existent. The power that these works hold to move us is at root the power of the story that makes the work possible. The story that explains where human creativity, like is fully evident in the amazing talent of Benjamin Britten, comes from in the first place. And in this case, to use Spurgeon's words, the story of God's sneak attack on the forces of evil. It's something we'll soon celebrate. For Breakpoint, I'm John Stone Street. Merry Christmas.
The weekend is here.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast as our region continues to reel from the record-setting storm that buried parts of our eastern Twin Tiers region. We've got some quieter weather ahead and slightly milder weather as the core of the cold air moves away. Though there will be a weak disturbance arriving tomorrow night and Sunday with a little bit of light snow and some sprinkles. The call for this afternoon, we're going to find across the area overcast skies breaking where they have not already for some sun. It'll vary across the area, temperatures peaking in the 20s for most. Then tonight, some starlight and some cloud cover, low temperatures into the teens and low 20s. Then tomorrow, after a little sun, turns out cloudy in the 30s, and cloudy on Sunday with a touch of light snow and some sprinkles, and high temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, you're plugged into the Noon Report on Family Life. Welcome to a special edition of Capital Connection. This is our Year in Review special report. We're counting down the top five stories of 2020, and what a year it has been. So what were the issues and the events that mattered most in New York and Pennsylvania? Who better to ask than the Capital Connection crew? They are Jason McGuire and Michael Gear. And gentlemen, welcome to the program. Hard to believe the year is almost over. I don't think either of you are going to be missing it too much. But Michael, let's start with you. The five biggest stories from New York and Pennsylvania. What did you have, sir, and why?
Well, one of the biggest ones was obviously Pennsylvania being a swing state and the focus of the election on Pennsylvania, especially with the Trump rallies that happened in our state, setting records with crowds. The largest one, I think 57,000 in Butler, Pennsylvania. Sometimes President Trump doing three or even four rallies across our state. That, I think, set a precedent for what we've seen in Pennsylvania in comparison to what would be described as President-elect Biden visits to Pennsylvania were few and far between and very sparsely attended. Typically, yeah. He would just come across the border from Delaware into Pennsylvania to Philadelphia to do those gatherings, typically people sitting in their cars. But those rallies in Pennsylvania being a swing state was a big story in 2020.
And it was almost on a daily basis, too. And that I had that as my fifth biggest story of the year as well, the Trump-Biden rallies in the critical battleground state. Jason, what was your fifth biggest story of the year?
My fifth biggest story is one that's still unfolding, and that's the congressional race in New York 22. I mean, to think that a congressional race with those tens of thousands of ballots representing hundreds of thousands of constituents is coming down to, 12 ballots battling back and forth, ballots that are found in drawers months after the election. This is a story that's still unfolding, but I think it's a story that's going to play out in 2021 as we head to the courts, is what will happen in that race between Claudia Tenney and Mr. Brindisi in New York 22.
Very interesting. I had the Dem supermajority in Albany this year and what that might mean for legislation going forward as my fifth biggest story. Countdown 5-1, the the biggest news events from Albany and Harrisburg with the Capital Connection crew. Jason, we'll start with you on this one, your fourth biggest story of 2020.
Well, Bob, your fifth biggest story is my fourth biggest story. I'm taking a look at what happened in the state Senate this year, the rise of the Senate Democratic supermajority, and not just the Senate, but also the Assembly. And there's a progressive wing now in Albany that's probably going to dictate the agenda for at least the next couple of cycles.
All right, huge story indeed. And in Harrisburg, Michael, number four on your list.
Well, I think it's a national story that had significant implications in Pennsylvania with the George Floyd killing in Minneapolis, leading to riots in that city, but then spreading to other places, including Philadelphia here in Pennsylvania, but rioting, looting. What has happened since then, massive increases in crimes, and Philadelphia is facing what looks to be the third highest homicide rate in the 60 years it's been measured. Difficult future coming forward in 2021 in places like Philadelphia.
Yeah, I had the fourth biggest story in PA, Act 77 in action, the impact of early voting this year, and I'm sure we'll be talking more about that with you, Michael. But in the meantime, two down, three to go. The third biggest news event in Pennsylvania this year. Michael, what did you have?
Well, I would say it's the actions of our governor, and basically that has to do with the COVID shutdowns and things, and sort of the grasp and embrace of power, shutting out the legislature and its efforts to try to partner with the governor and how the COVID crisis is going to be handled in our state. He's vetoed significant numbers of bills that the legislature sent to him to allow a partnership in how to deal with the COVID crisis, and terrible what happened there.
Yeah, so even an impacted Governor Wolf, he got infected. We don't know if Governor Cuomo was infected or not, but a lot of other people in New York was. Jason, I had COVID in New York killing 35,000 people as my third biggest story of the year. What was yours, Jason McGuire?
Yeah, it seems like all these stories are related, and I'm just going to refer to as the Cuomo press conferences, the rise of Andrew Cuomo as a national figure again. I think the governor saw that during this COVID crisis and the pandemic, he had an opportunity to seize the attention of not only New York, but the nation, and held daily press conferences, quite lengthy ones, that were covered. It led to his receiving an Emmy for his leadership during the pandemic, of all things. And I think that was the biggest story for me, for number three here in New York, is watching what has happened with Andrew Cuomo. And an interest, now that we're going into what's being called a second wave, to see him try to bring back the press conferences, but not to have the press in the room, to do it through Zoom. It seems like there was a little backfire effect this time around. I think it's frustrating the governor.
Yeah.
But the Cuomo press conferences are number three.
That was a huge story as well. And we've got three down, two to go. The top two news events of 2020 in New York and Pennsylvania. I had the nursing home deaths, Jason, in New York. What a story that was. They gave the governor an Emmy for his press conferences, but this did not bode well for Governor Cuomo, and the impact of that story this year, you cannot overstate it. But be interesting to find out what your second biggest story of the year was.
That is my biggest story of the year, is the nursing home deaths and the homes, the group homes, people with developmental disabilities and others. You know, to watch the governor that has tried to manage this so tightly, to watch that issue get away, and we still don't know the numbers on the nursing home deaths in New York. The state continues to block the real number behind those deaths. And so there are people that are impacted by this, not only through the deaths that have occurred in the nursing homes, but it has also had an impact on families to this day that cannot visit their loved ones there. And that continues to be a story, that these people are being left alone in these homes around the state. That's my second biggest story of 2020.
Second biggest story in Pennsylvania this year, Michael.
The second biggest story in our state really starts in October of 2019 when Act 77 passed. You mentioned that before, but that created election controversy in our state that has continued right up until this date and going into January, with court cases still pending on a state Senate race in Western Pennsylvania, the presidential race obviously in uproar as a result of what happened with mail-in ballots and vote counting and what machines are being used. So many of those different things make election issues in Pennsylvania one of the biggest, number two story for us here, I would say, in 2020. And going forward, it's going to be something we need to look at.
Yeah, and you said back on election night, Michael, you asked a question, is Pennsylvania, the Florida from 2000. You all remember hanging dimpled and pregnant chads. This one more to do with early voting and why in the wide world of sports did everything shut down at 10:30 at night and not open up again until the next morning? That is a question we're still looking to get answers to, and I as well had that as the second biggest story of the year. Okay, here we go. Top story of 2020 in New York and Pennsylvania. Michael, we'll start with you.
Well, I think the big one would say that God has sustained us through 2020. This has been one of the most challenging years that people would say on record, whether it's the impact of COVID with the severe sickness and deaths that has come from that, or the economic impacts of COVID that have happened as well, with school shutdowns and holidays being, we're being told to don't visit people, you know, being shut out of visiting the elderly in nursing homes. And yet God remains on the throne, and we can trust in him even in these challenging times. And I think it's a time that many families have, in spite of these challenges, come together. People have recognized the value of churches, the value of community, and we cherish that, I think, even more. And that would be a good thing in a very difficult year.
Very difficult indeed. And Jason, ring the bell. You're the final one. Let's put a bow on this package for our listeners and give us your top story of 2020.
Well, I guess these minds are thinking alike, because I see a sovereign God who sustained us through these state shutdowns. This has been a very challenging year for New York as well. And, you know, in the Empire State, we were the first state to see this statewide shutdown. And it may be in January we're heading back in that direction, if you listen to the governor's comments. And yet, through it all, we continue to see how God has sustained us as an organization. He has led to even a Supreme Court ruling that has peeled back the religious gathering restrictions and allowing churches to meet again. That was a huge move in the Supreme Court. Mm-hmm. And we're just watching that God has seen us through this. Studies are even showing that people that are engaged in their church are weathering COVID-19 better than those that are not. Mm-hmm. And so what a great opportunity to have evangelism on our minds as we head into 2021.
Well, guys, this will be the last time we speak in 2020. And I just want to say what a blessing you both are to me and what a blessing you are to this ministry to be able to showcase you every week. But before we go, you know, folks may not know that you're both not-for-profits and it's not cheap to do what you do. And this is the time of year when people look to make year-end contributions. I'm sure both of you would appreciate it if folks would stand with you financially. Jason, let's begin with you. Where can folks find out more about New Yorkers for Constitutional Freedoms?
NewYorkFamilies.org.
And how can folks give to the great work going on at the Pennsylvania Family Institute, Michael?
That'd be pafamily.org/donate.
Guys, what a year it has been. Capital Connection comes your way every Friday during the noon report.
Good afternoon. Here is your Family Life regional weather forecast as our region continues to reel from the record-setting storm that buried parts of our eastern Twin Tiers region. We've got some quieter weather ahead and slightly milder weather as the core of the cold air moves away. Though there will be a weak disturbance arriving tomorrow night and Sunday with a little bit of light snow and some sprinkles. The call for this afternoon, we're going to find across the area overcast skies breaking where they have not already for some sun. It'll vary across the area, temperatures peaking in the 20s for most. Then tonight, some starlight and some cloud cover, low temperatures into the teens and low 20s. Then tomorrow, after a little sun, turns out cloudy in the 30s, and cloudy on Sunday with a touch of light snow and some sprinkles, and high temperatures in the 30s and lower 40s.
Okay, Kevin Williams, have yourself a fantastic weekend. Finally, this Friday, the snow angel from Harrisburg. That is what Tiana Smith is calling Louis Barbour after he showed up to help her dig out from this week's record-setting snowstorm.
Snow angel. Because I was out here doing it myself, and he just came out of nowhere and was like, hey, you trying to get out? I'm like, yes, and he just saved me.
Louis Barbour says helping total strangers out, a no-brainer for him.
I do this for free.
But that doesn't mean he doesn't get something out of it.
I like to exercise. I burn a lot of calories doing this. I'm 61 years old, so this is good exercise for me. And then, you know, you help people, then that's how good things come your way. That's how it works.
Yes, it does. That's Louis Barbour, the snow angel from Harrisburg. That's the world we live in this Friday. Have yourself a great weekend. I'm Bill Price, Family Life News.
You've been listening to the Noon Report, heard weekdays on Family Life. Thank you for listening.